Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me? Welcome to the Now Hear This, Canby podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Tyler Frankie, and this is what's happening this week in our community. Canby's first known Pride event was a low-key affair as families, youth, community members, and visitors gathered for a picnic Sunday afternoon to support and celebrate the LGBTQ+ community. Dubbed Pride in the Park, the grassroots event was organized by Christy Smith, a member and ally of the LGBTQ+ community, and other volunteers. We just wanted to get some folks together and have a friendly event, said Smith, who identifies as queer and uses she/her pronouns. We've got some music, bubbles, chalk, and community. With no formal program, attendees were free to celebrate in their own ways, like painting or tossing a football around. The approximately 100 participants also shared cold drinks, miniature pride flags and stickers, and books and resources in support of the LGBTQ+ community. It made me incredibly happy and proud of Canby to see so many families come together to break bread, play games, and meet their neighbors, said City Councilor Sarah Spoon, who attended the event with her family. Canby is a beautiful community full of love and kindness. The Pride event was a delightful expression of those Canby characteristics. Catherine McMullen, a candidate for Clackamas County Clerk, and Roz Mason, the Democratic nominee for Canby's State Senate District, also joined the festivities. Canby has a complicated history with the LGBTQ+ community. The town became a battleground in the struggle for same-sex rights in the early to mid-90s when the right-wing Oregon Citizens Alliance attempted to mobilize support for anti-gay and anti-abortion initiatives across the state. The OCA and its efforts found a friendly reception in Canby, which Canby Herald editor Tom Lawrence described in a 1993 interview with then-Oregonian reporter Jeff Mapes as a town of 29 churches and one tavern. Several of those churches hosted OCA Chairman Lon Maben and other representatives in the bitter fight over Ballot Measure 9, which would have amended the Oregon Constitution to recognize homosexual behavior as abnormal, wrong, unnatural, and perverse. The initiative failed in the November 1992 general election, with more than 56% of Oregonians opposing it, but it passed in Canby and other conservative-leaning areas, inspiring the OCA to take their fight to local communities. Over the next 2 years, the group introduced more than 24 local initiatives similar to Measure 9 in cities and counties across Oregon, including Canby, Oregon City, and Malala, almost all of which passed. Canby was one of the first, with just shy of 56% of voters approving the measure in June of 1993. But the campaign split the town nearly in two, sparking the formation of groups for and against the initiative, including Canby Area Citizens for Traditional Values and Canby Neighbors for a Safe Community. When, later that year, the Oregon legislature passed a new law prohibiting local governments from enacting anti-LGBT ordinances, effectively superseding Canby's and other local measures, proponents turned their anger toward Maureen Miltenberger and Joe Driggers, two city councilors that had opposed the initiative. The two had publicly stated they felt the measure was unconstitutional and even signed onto a lawsuit brought by the American Civil Liberties Union against the city. Their stance would eventually be vindicated in the court of public opinion as well as several actual courts, but it did not save them from recall campaigns that narrowly removed both from office in December of 1993. They were the only successful recalls of a sitting local elected official in Canby in at least the past 50 years. A year and a half later, Driggers ran for and won a position on the Canby School Board, where he would serve for 8 years. Milton Berger also ran for a different seat in March of 1993, but finished third in a five-way race. Milton Berger eventually moved to Florence on the Oregon coast, where she remains active in local politics, losing a three-person race for the city council in 2018 before winning a seat on the Suislaw School Board last May. More recently, the city drew statewide attention in 2019 when Mayor Brian Hodson denied a request for a proclamation recognizing International Transgender Day of Visibility, and several community members, including Canby School Board member Stephanie Carlson, spoke against it. The fallout led to the formation of the Canby Transgender Alliance, a group Smith is involved in, which participated in the Portland Pride Parade in 2019. I think there was some definite nervous energy on how it was going to be perceived, Smith said of Sunday's Pride event, but I think folks are happy to be together again. The pandemic has been a hard time for us too. Everyone is able to come as they are and be supported. I've seen a lot of love here, lots of smiles. For photos, find this story on our website, canbyfirst.com, or follow the Canby Current on Facebook and Instagram. A Portland man was killed Sunday night when his motorcycle collided with another vehicle in Milwaukee, Oregon State Police reported. According to troopers, James Robert Sheehan, 57, was driving a red Harley-Davidson motorcycle northbound when he collided with a southbound silver Mazda MZ3 operated by 76-year-old Oregon City resident David Norby, which was turning left across traffic. The crash occurred shortly before 9:30 p.m. on Highway 99E near Southeast Jennings Avenue. Sheehan sustained fatal injuries and was pronounced dead at the scene. Norby was not hurt in the collision. Investigators are looking into the motorcycle's speed as a possible factor in the crash, according to Captain Stephanie Bigman, a spokeswoman for the Oregon State Police. OSP was assisted by Gladstone Police Department, Clackamas Fire District, AMR, and ODOT. Sheehan was owner and founder of the Muddy River Public House, a neighborhood pub and music venue he opened in the Selwood neighborhood of Southeast Portland in 2007. An experienced builder and motorcycle enthusiast, Sheehan reworked the cabinetry, flooring, and other custom woodwork and drew on his background in the fishing industry in crafting the pub's maritime theme. Canby's beloved local concert series Slice of Summer could be in trouble if organizers and its nonprofit host organization are unable to find needed volunteers before the first show kicks off next month. Less than 2 weeks before local favorites the Jesse James Band is scheduled to kick off the concert series on July 10th, organizer Lisa Lear said more volunteers are desperately needed for sales and setup. In addition to helping keep the grassroots summer concert series going strong, volunteers also get a free shirt or tank and a $5 food voucher for participating vendors. Those interested in signing up may do so on the group's website. Slice plans to present 3 more concerts this summer in addition to Jesse James Band, including Thrill Ride on July 24th, Stump City Soul on August 7th, and Generator on August 21st. Slice of Summer has been a staple of the Canby community for more than 3 decades. After the event lapsed in 2017, it was brought back by a dedicated group of volunteers under the nonprofit umbrella of the Canby Livability Coalition. But the going has not always been easy, with organizers calling for donations earlier this year to fund the full summer lineup and the more recent struggles to secure volunteers. Yet, the series has been popular and well-attended since its revival, especially last summer when it was one of the first large events to return after the COVID shutdowns of 2020. The nonprofit Friends of the Canby Public Library has also announced it is bringing its free summer concert series back to Wake Park this summer, with monthly shows scheduled from July to September to coincide with the first Thursday night market in downtown Canby. Kicking things off will be Chica Marimba on July 7th. On August 4th, Castletown will come to town. And finally, by popular demand, the Rose City Brass Quintet will return on September 1st. All shows are free and begin at 6 p.m. A 31-year-old woman was seriously hurt Friday when she fell several hundred feet while climbing Mount Hood, the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office said in a press release. Other climbers on the mountain were able to call 911 and relay critical information to dispatchers after the fall, which happened just before 6 a.m. Friday in the Old Chute area of Mount Hood. A medical doctor, who was also climbing the mountain at the time, got to the woman and rendered first aid until rescuers could reach them. Clackamas County Sheriff's Office search and rescue coordinators set up a command center at Timberline Lodge, deploying volunteers from Portland Mountain Rescue and the Hood River Crag Rats, among others. Searchers from the American Medical Response's Reach and Treat team and the Oregon Office of Emergency Management also took part. Shortly after 10 a.m., about 4 hours after the woman's fall, rescue crews were able to reach the injured climber. About 45 minutes later, an Oregon Army National Guard helicopter also arrived. The climber was hoisted into the helicopter and flown to a Portland area hospital where she is receiving care. Deputies did not disclose the woman's identity or current condition in the June 25th press release. Cougar Country Hometown Sports Coverage is brought to you by Reif & Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country Pod. The Canby High School equestrian team thundered into the Pacific Northwest Invitational Championship at Moses Lake, Washington earlier this month, where their talented young drill team did the same thing at the regional finals that they had done all season, win. The regional competition, the final in the high school equestrian season, features the top five competitors or teams in each event from the two state organizations, Oregon High School Equestrian Team, or OSET, and Washington Area High School Equestrian Team, WASET. Canby's premier drill team of Sadie Schweitzer, Madison Wheeler, Maddie Biggie, and Haley Magenheimer, which had previously triumphed at the district and state levels, took home the gold belt buckles in an event called Freestyle Fours. The team had an exceptional performance at the Pacific Northwest Invitation Championship, Coach Kristen Schweitzer told Now Hear This Canby. The athletes were so nervous that morning, but one of our former Canby OSET team members was there helping and encouraging girls to take a deep breath and have fun. The drill team wasn't particularly in need of some veteran insight given its youth and inexperience. The quartet is made up of three freshmen and one sophomore, none of whom had ever competed in a drill team event before. This drill team has been nothing short of amazing, Schweitzer said. They worked hard together as a team and accomplished great things. Our drill coach, Sam Stanky, is incredibly proud of what this group of four has accomplished this year, especially since they are all newbies. The team's chemistry has been one of its staples all season, culminating with its gold medal performance in the same event at the 2022 OSET State Champion Meet in Redmond last month. Winning the regional competition was the, quote, perfect ending to their incredible season, the coach said. After the performance, the girls came out of the arena with the biggest smiles on their faces, she recalled. They'd put on a great performance and they knew it. It was now up to the judges to make the final decision. When Canby was announced as the champions, they erupted with squeals of delight, hugging their drill coach. Tears of joy filled their eyes. Canby athletes had also qualified for the regional finals in a number of other events. Schweitzer also punched her ticket with third place state championship performances in dressage, showmanship, and in-hand trail, as well as a fifth place showing in team sorting with partner Madison Wheeler. The team of Schweitzer, Wheeler, Magenheimer, and Hannah Smith also earned bids to the PNWIC for team versatility and in-hand obstacle relay. Outside of Freestyle 4s, Canby's highest places at regionals were Schweitzer's fourth place showing in in-hand trail and the in-hand obstacle relay team's fifth place finish. It's back. That's right. Canby's signature Independence Day celebration, one of the North Willamette Valley's most popular and exciting community events, returns this summer in all of its glory. Sponsored by the City of Canby, the community's beloved annual July 4th blast includes the one-of-a-kind parade through downtown Canby, local street fair featuring dozens of local food vendors and artisans, arcade truck and kids zone, sprawling classic car show, Canby Fire-hosted obstacle course, and live entertainment from both the iconic Waite Park gazebo stage and family-friendly beer garden on 2nd Avenue. Afterward, grab your blankets and camp chairs and head to Waite Park for the incredible community fireworks show by Canby Fire and Western Display Fireworks, starting at dusk at Trost Elementary and Baker Prairie Middle School. This is the community extravaganza 3 years in the making, the one you've all been waiting for, bigger and better than ever. 10 a.m. Monday, July 4th, only in downtown Canby. For times, parade route, and other information, or to get involved, visit canbyindependenceday.com. Hey, Tyler, read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually, I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome. What's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these two kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting, though. Who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor, starts with like an S or something. Sass, Sos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay. Well, hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Canby.
Yeah, guys, this local, independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Canby. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expansive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcanby.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read. Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
Joining us on the Canby Conversation today, we're so excited to have on and introduce you, not that new to the community anymore, but the new director of the Clackamas County Fairgrounds and Event Center, Brian Crow. Hi, Brian.
Hey, thanks for having me. Yeah. I've been here since March 20th, so yeah. About 3 months in.
Yeah, not really new anymore. Now you're more like the veteran director of the... No.
Okay, it's old hat now.
Well, you were just trying out your podcast voice, so it's pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we might need to get you on the payroll here for narration. Just in your ample spare time. How has it been in the past 3 months? You came from, remind us.
Jefferson County.
Yeah.
I looked after the Jefferson County Fairgrounds for almost 6 years. And it's awesome here. I feel like I'm built for this job.
Yeah.
Every piece of it is... it's not easy, but it's right in my wheelhouse. And we've got a great team. Culture is really good right now, and we're just banging on all cylinders. So excited for a busy couple of months coming up, including fair in August. But Things are shaping up nicely.
Yeah, yeah. You have a background with Jefferson County, obviously doing fairs. There was some capital improvements that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then before that, a lot of music experience, all things that will lend itself really well to what was already in the works and what you hope to get in the works here in Clackamas County.
Yeah, for sure. So I spent about 20 years in the live music industry from starting out as a volunteer at a music festival up in Washington. They ended up hiring me full-time, and I was with them full-time for about 10 years.
Yeah.
Then a group of us split off and started a country music festival in Ontario, Canada called Boots and Hearts.
Yep.
And I was the executive producer of that festival.
Second largest
country music and camping festival in North America.
Yeah.
Stagecoach is the only one that's bigger than it.
Yeah.
And, you know, our last year we had 40,000 people a day coming.
That's insane.
And 29,000 camping on site.
Uh-huh.
So when you just consider the infrastructure of on-site campers at that magnitude.
That's a city twice the size of Canby.
It is. We had 950 porta potties that were being serviced 24 hours a day. So
yeah.
it was really interesting. And hundreds of private contractors from security to stage hands and the whole bit. The transition to the fair industry was actually a pretty seamless transition for me because a lot of the same elements come into play with music festivals.
Sure.
We had the carnival, we had food vendors, commercial vendors, we had multiple stages, entertainment, that sort of translated really well. The only piece I didn't have experience with was the 4-H and FFA animals, the agricultural component.
Yeah.
I mean, growing up, I had a dog and a gerbil.
Okay.
But I didn't show either one of them. So that was a little bit of a learning curve for me.
But you had that first step down.
yeah, for sure. But now I've got a pretty good understanding of how those organizations work. And both 4-H and FFA, I have a real adoration for those organizations. They are literally building the leaders for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with music, with events, a big piece of it is that cultural component, the audience, and you with your background in country music and Christian, contemporary Christian music, there's a lot of overlap, I feel, coming into the fair industry and coming here to Canby, frankly.
Well, both industries are real similar. You're creating an experience for people to come to create memories.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the fair, you know, this fair has deep, deep roots in the community.
Yeah.
Having been here since 1908 was the first fair here. It was in Gladstone before in 1907.
Yeah.
I don't talk to anybody that doesn't have some experience with a county fair.
Yeah.
Whether it was, Clackamas County Fair or wherever it was.
Yeah.
You can say, what are your memories of the county fair? And they'll talk about going in to see the animals or the food or, they entered a photography project in the open class exhibits.
Yeah.
And so when I talk to staff and to volunteers, I say, we're not in the fair business. We're not in the entertainment business. We're in the generational memories business. Mm.
Yeah.
And that's what we strive for is to create those opportunities for families and adults, single, whatever, single, married, whatever, to create memories that will last a lifetime.
Yeah, yeah. This is going to be probably a little controversial. There's always people that are like, oh, it's changed so much. But I feel as someone who's loves Clackamas County Fair, has been many times, and other large events, including State Fair, and I feel Clackamas County just is so... still has a unique kind of feel to it that's very, it has a unique brand, I think Clackamas County does. And having, research from the history and whatnot and how important agriculture always was to it, I feel that that's sort of been stewarded over the years. Is even as, we'll add rides, we'll add these like more modern things, but there are some, I feel like you could go just blind and feel like, I'm at the Clackamas County Fair.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
One of my goals or missions, I guess probably a mission, would be to preserve that classic county fair feel.
Yeah.
We have the Pioneer Village that lives in part of our property during the fair.
Yeah.
That, takes you right back to what the pioneers were doing when they came out this way on the Oregon Trail or however they got here. That's an important part of heritage that we want to continue to preserve.
There's a real authenticity to it, too. I mean, those actors are incredible, but they're literally, they set up shop there and they live out there for the fair. They eat out there, they make their meals out there, they live like the folks did, you know, in those days. Yeah.
And minus the RVs.
Well,
so
you're not supposed to see that.
So it's my objective to continue to grow the fair with the historical value in mind. I mean, if you harken back to the beginning of the county fairs, and I'm holding up my quote fingers on that. The first agricultural fair in the United States was in 1765, so 11 years before we became a country. It was in York, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And that spread across the country. And, you know, the original goal of the county fair was to connect urban and rural communities to allow an opportunity to understand each other and for the agricultural community early on to be able to show the products that they're growing, their wares, you know, and really connect with people that are living in the more metropolitan areas.
Yeah.
So that history lives deep in me. And while we still have to have those parts of the fair that generate money, we really want to keep that classic county fair feel. You know, you go to other fairs within the state and it's very commercialized and everything costs something. And we're pushing back on that model. But we also do that with the understanding that, you know, in order to pay for these other things, we have to have profit centers. And, you know, those are the carnival and the beer gardens and the rodeo and, you know, the percentage we take on our food vendors. So that's what pays for the fair. That stuff, we still, with our food vendors, we're trying to avoid the big flashy food stands. We focus really on local vendors as much as we can. But, you know, I want people when they walk into our fair to take a deep breath and feel like, man, we're not in Portland. And nothing against Portland, but it's a breath of fresh air when you walk onto our grounds. We have beautiful grounds. We have historic. The Pine Grove, the Fir Grove, the historic buildings. And that's at the forefront of my mind as we're working on new projects down there.
Absolutely. And I love the historic buildings out there and how well they've been preserved. I mean, a lot of them, maybe parts that you see, you can tell in the background, but the parts that are, you know, on display, open to the public, certainly the outside, are so well preserved and so well taken care of. You know, it certainly doesn't feel like these are 100 years old.
Some of them feel like 100 years old, depending on where you go.
You probably see that in the basement and some areas.
Our maintenance staff, and we have our maintenance director, Caroline Erland, has been with us for 26 years. And she has done a great job leading a maintenance team to make sure that we're keeping up with that stuff. You know, finances have always been a tough component to the fair industry. We don't receive any general fund money from the county. We operate on TLT taxes, transient lodging taxes. We get a small stipend from the state lottery funds every year, but everything else that we do budget-wise is paid for by interim events. So there has been, you know, 15 to 30 years of deferred maintenance on some of the structures. But I think we're in a position now to really look forward to that 5, 10, 15-year plan to start replacing some of those or rehabilitating them.
I want to hear more about that here in a bit, but you talk about, you know, really wanting to preserve the things and even bolster the things that make Clackamas County Fair what it is. How do you go about that work being, you know, new to the area? Are you reaching out to folks? Kind of what does the fair mean to you? What are the important parts of it to you? Or do you maybe get those unsolicited from Canby folks? Hey, you know, bending your ear as they see you. So
a lot of people that are still involved as volunteers at the fairgrounds have been, you know, either their parents or their grandparents were involved.
Like my grandmother was Miss Clackamas County. Exactly. 1922.
And, you know, I love to hear those stories. Right in my first week that I came, I got a tour of the whole facility with a gentleman whose mom used to run the fun fairgrounds. the fun grounds.
Yeah. Yeah. I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
And I just love hearing the history. You know, I have a picture of myself on the main lawn getting my 4-H award back in 1950.
Yeah.
That stuff is great. And I, while, you know, at least now for the next 2 months, I'm extremely busy preparing for all the events we have.
Sure.
That is almost like when I get someone that comes in and tells me about the way it used to be, it's like a shot of energy.
Yeah.
It motivates me. It gets me excited about the things we can do to not only preserve that, but to enhance it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, is it not, that the Clackamas County Fair is in Canby? Because typically they're at the county seat, right? Which would be Oregon City.
Yeah, I don't know how accurate that is. If you look at Deschutes County, it's in Redmond, which is not the county seat.
Okay.
So that may or may not be accurate, and I honestly don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
I think if it would have been in Clackamas, it'd be a whole different beast. If we're up across the river, or, you know, up 205, I think it would be – it would look entirely different.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, it landed in Canby.
Yeah.
And for a long time was known as the Canby Fair.
Right.
I think it's been a blessing.
When you talk about the values that kind of enliven the Clackamas County Fair, and especially, you know, not even just Clackamas County, but kind of the, as you described, the original intention of the fair, bringing together these more rural endeavors and with the urban kind of community as well. That's Canby, right? I mean, it really just all kind of fits as far, I feel like, no offense to Oregon City, but Canby's more geographically as well, but kind of closer to the heart, I think, of Clackamas County.
I would agree with that
wholeheartedly.
Canby is unique, especially within what would be considered the Portland metro and
sure.
bedroom communities.
Yeah,
we have a very strong agricultural community here. Yeah. And I think now in today's world, it is more important than ever to educate urban livers, urban dwellers, as to what the agricultural community brings. If ag fails, then everybody fails.
Yeah.
There's no food on the shelves. You know, you can't go down and buy Wonder Bread because there's no wheat for Wonder Bread.
Right.
You know, it's, I think the current generation doesn't really understand where food comes from.
Yes.
And this, it's really important for us as agricultural showcases to educate them.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of joy, I think, in that, and being able to kind of share, you know, even just like, nope, that's a goat, that's not a sheep, or like having some fun with it, but of sharing, you know, the things that are so important to you with someone else who, you know, can learn from that and experience joy from that.
That's one of my favorite things is to watch young children in the animals. Their faces light up. They get excited to see a cow up close or a sheep or a goat or a chicken or a llama.
Llamas are big hits.
We'll have camel rides this year too. Oh, nice. So, I mean, we'll have camels out there.
Yeah.
But the joy that just the simple things brings to the kids is really where it's all at for me.
Yeah.
When I think of kind of my perfect picture of what fair is like, it's watching a family walking together, kids in hand with mom and dad. The boy has, you know, red stain down the front of his shirt from the snow cone that he slurped up, and the girl's face is just covered I was thinking ice cream, you know, just like dried on crusted ice cream on the face.
Yeah.
But they're having a great time.
Yeah.
And those kids will grow up to bring their kids to fair, and their kids will bring their kids.
Yeah.
And, like I said, that's the generational memories business that we're in.
Yeah, awesome.
Hey, Tyler, we have a furry new friend I wanted to show you. His name is Frankie with an I-E. Isn't that cute?
Oh, I get it, because you're Frankie with a C-K-E.
Yeah.
That's so clever.
I know.
The only cute thing I see on this video is me, because you're blurry and frozen.
What? No way. I just got a new phone, and it's supposed to have a great camera.
Dude, you can have the best camera in the world, but you still freeze up if your video calls don't have quality internet.
So what should I do? Frankie's playing in the pool and it's absolutely adorable.
I'm guessing you're using your mobile data for this FaceTime call, right? Just connect to your home Wi-Fi instead. I bet your video comes through just fine. You did just upgrade to Direct Link with Wi-Fi and fast upload speeds, so you might as well get the best use out of them.
Oh, yeah, I did. Okay, hang on. There. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I should be on my Wi-Fi now.
Yep.
Can we see Frankie in the pool?
Oh, he looks like he's having a blast. See what fast upload speeds can do? For upload and downloads at the speed of aww, visit www.directlink.coop/internet or give him a call at 503-266-8111.
Frankie, give me back.
I'm Roz Mason, running for Oregon Senate District 26. Voters across the political spectrum know the majority Supreme Court decision to overturn abortion rights and similar efforts in Republican-led states is an attack on our freedoms. For years, I worked in the domestic abuse field, seeing firsthand the harm to women and teen girls from a lack of reproductive information and birth control, too few economic options, and the tragedies of partner abuse and sexual violence. Now, state legislatures decide abortion access. Oregon will protect women's right to abortion only if Democratic, independent, and moderate Republicans fight to elect reasonable legislators. Your vote makes a difference, so I can fight for privacy, our rights, and healthier families. Paid for by Mason for Oregon, 21968.
Well, you mentioned this earlier as far as looking toward the future. We've talked about the kind of values in the Canby community and how those really are on full display in the fair. If there's one thing I've learned in a few years of covering the news and engaging really deeply with the Canby community, one thing that they love is when things change. So,
I
had to go for a second.
Hey-o.
Not looking to, you know, make big changes, I'm sure, but kind of what are some things that you kind of are working toward that were maybe already in play, but that you really see from your experience are some things that will make the fair and the fairgrounds even better and are kind of on your docket as you, obviously, next couple months are making sure the events go, but what's kind of on your agenda?
Yeah, there's one big project that we're embarking on that's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
I think well over a decade ago, the old livestock barn was condemned and brought to the ground.
Yeah.
We've secured...
And it's been just put up as a tent.
Yeah, every year we put up tents,
yeah.
And they're really expensive.
Yes.
And we have just embarked on a construction project to replace that facility. Mm-hmm. So we've selected an architect. We've started with geotechnical studies. It's going to start moving pretty quickly. The plan is to have it be a 50,000 square foot multipurpose facility.
That's enormous.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And it's designed to house both people and animals in the event of another fire evacuation or flooding or what have you.
Yeah.
Designed for that perfect purpose in mind.
Yeah.
But it'll also be dividable inside with air walls, so we can have four different events happening at one time in there.
Nice.
And my goal from the music industry is to build it in such a way that we can put a stage in and start attracting some tours and, you know, music festivals
and
things.
Larger
indoor events.
Yeah.
The nice thing about being indoor, especially with the music events, is it it controls some of the audio bleed.
Yeah.
We can operate it year round.
Yeah.
We have great parking,
yeah.
Paved access to it. And part of what we'll be doing is a little more paving around the exterior of it.
Yeah.
But it's about a $12 million project.
Wow.
It's not a bit of chump change.
Yeah.
We've had great partnership with Bill Kenneber and Christine Drazen, funneling some CARES money to us for it. And we have a pretty strong opportunity to secure the rest of the funding through other grants.
Yeah.
So
is this the type of thing where like we might see it fair of 2023? Is it that quick or?
So the construction timeline right now looks like doing all the planning, getting all of the building components ordered over the next year, construction starting in September of 23 and anticipated completion by May of 24.
Okay.
So right in time for that that summer season in 2024.
Yeah.
It's a big project. Steel takes a long time to get now.
Yeah.
And so I think it's smart that we not try and be too aggressive with the timeline.
Yeah. So it will be a steel fabricated.
That's what I suspect.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we'll probably bandy around some different ideas, whether it's, you know,
to try to merge the sort tip of
concrete
that we have.
I feel like it's going to probably be more, from a visual perspective, it's going to be more like the Rosebrook Arena.
Okay.
But with side, you know, with walls fully enclosed.
Yeah. Which is a cool structure.
Yeah. It's nice. And, you know, if you build it with steel or, you know, concrete or, you know, some durable product, then, you know, that's a 50, 75, 100 year building.
Yeah.
So then, you know, when we're done with that, we move on to the next project, which could be rehabilitating or replacing our stalls.
Yeah.
Rehabilitating the Ely Arena.
Yeah. So we've got the new drive-in screen right near there. Is that going to be changing?
The drive-in is on hold for now.
Okay.
One of the challenges we have is the direction it's facing, which faces right where the new building is going to go up.
Yeah.
And so we've got to look at, again, a significant investment to relocate that.
Yeah.
Whether it's spinning it around and facing it toward the west, or even moving it over into the yellow lot, which makes a lot of sense to me, but I'm not comfortable moving forward with anything on it until I have a business plan that makes
sense. How it's
gonna
be used. Absolutely. So, that sounds like a really exciting project. You at Jefferson County had a barn that was built, right? A new events space?
Sure. Yeah. Over the last 3 years in Jefferson County, I was part of two capital projects. One was to replace a picnic pavilion that was destroyed by a really heavy snowfall we had.
Yeah.
And then we raised money to build a new show barn. It's a steel roof structure that's 14,000 square feet. Hmm. And it's designed mostly for showing animals, and it'll give a place for the auction at the end of fair. But it was really fun to be involved in those capital projects. And I think it's queued me up well to be part of the team to build the new multipurpose facility.
Okay, last question I wanted to ask you, and you've talked about this a little bit, but just obviously there are a lot of events that coming back to the fairgrounds. Who cares? Clackamas County Fair. Coming into, that's what everyone wants to know, right? Coming into this year's fair, what's kind of your plan, or what are kind of your marching orders from the board? Are you hoping to just, we did have a fair last year. You guys have kind of updated some of your branding, your logo. Are you looking to maybe just do little improvements around the margins like that? Or you know, what, I guess, for folks coming to the fair, you know, what can they expect?
So last summer, the fair was put on in a very short period of time.
Right, because we didn't know.
It was just a couple of months lead time.
Yeah.
And it's like all of us, even over in Jefferson County, we were waiting and waiting and waiting.
Things were changing even as the weeks leading into the fair. You know, can't do masks inside. But not. I mean, it was a different, strange environment. We were so glad to have it, but it was odd.
And the team, the fair board, all pulled together to put off a fair that was successful, had record attendance at it.
Yeah.
Kudos to them for that. When I came on board, I made it really clear that I had no plans on making big changes this year. We're doing some peripheral polishes, but really I need to know how the engine runs before I can start tuning it up. Then once I understand how it runs, we can throw that turbocharger on there, you know. And
get the nitrous in there. Yeah, for sure.
I don't want to forget, though, one of the really cool things about the Canby rodeo, which takes place during the Clackamas County Fair. It's a world-class rodeo.
Yeah.
I believe, if I remember right, it's number 57 in the country. And when you consider the thousands of rodeos across this country, that is, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's a great show. I think they call it 4 hours of rodeo in 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's just packed and back-to-back-to-back events. And, you know, if you haven't been to the rodeo, it is amazing.
Yeah.
And I would encourage you, Tyler, or your listeners or whoever's out there to come and check it out, because they put on a great show.
And having talked to, you know, some of the directors and even interviewed them on some of them on this show over the years, there's so much more that goes into it that people don't necessarily think about. You know, you think rodeo is just rodeo, but they know the people. They're very deliberate in how they schedule things, because, you know, that's something when you look at rodeos in comparison to other events, they don't just compare them head to head. It's, you know, the biggest July 4th rodeo, the biggest, you know, August rodeo in our case. So that's really, you know, how they're strategizing getting the best acts and things, is kind of timing them out to where we really, you know, on apples to apples, maybe we're number 57, but we're like top, you know, three or four in that period.
Yes.
And that's really why we are able to attract some of the world-class talent that shows up at those rodeos.
And the crazy thing is that the Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday shows of the rodeo are the ones that get the biggest, most famous performers, because they're going between the weekend before and then the weekend after.
Yeah.
And they travel through to get points and to win money.
Yeah.
And it's world class, top-notch performers. Yeah. And they'll have J.J. Harrison back this year.
Yeah.
He's always entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're right. A lot goes into it. We have about a 30-member Canby Rodeo Committee that presents the rodeo, and they're all volunteers. They dedicate their time and their efforts to raise sponsorships and to make sure that the schedule is proper. They put out a rodeo program that is just fantastic. So my kudos to them for all their hard work, and I just wanted to make sure we didn't forget about that here, because it's a huge part of what we're doing.
Yeah, awesome. If there are folks listening that want to be part of, if they want to you know, learn more about maybe volunteering or being involved in the fair, vendors, stuff like that, where can folks find out information?
I can go to ClackamasCountyFair.com
and
click the fair button. There's links to everything up there, from how to be a volunteer to how to, you know, sponsor the fair or the rodeo if you're interested in that. It takes a lot of sponsorships to fill the gap between what we make in those profit centers.
Yeah.
The fair itself basically breaks even every year.
Right.
And that's because of the support and the help of local businesses that believe in what we're doing.
Yeah.
And will support us financially, and they get some, you know, some perks for supporting us, but it's really partnering with the valuable work that the county fair does.
What's the attendance that we expect?
So it varies by year depending on weather, but generally it's between 60,000 to 80,000 people over the 5 days.
And we
do about, in the rodeo, we'll do 20,000 to 22,000 over the 5 days for the rodeo.
Yeah. That's crazy.
And rodeo tickets are on sale now.
There you go.
Also at ClackamasCountyFair.com.
Okay.
And you can also buy a fair admission in advance if you want to save some time at the gate.
Yeah, very cool. Well, Brian, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us. We're so happy to have you here running our fairgrounds and our fair, and helping out all the other large events that are taking place there. Anything else to share before you go?
Just that we are positioning ourselves as a complex, an event center, to bring more events more often throughout the year. It's a huge thing that we have Hair Fest and Wild Hair Festival coming to us. The Renaissance Fair was just here. They had a sellout weekend. It was their biggest attendance that they've ever had here in Clackamas County, and they're excited about coming back. We have the Clackamas Kennel Club Dog Show, which brings 5,000 to 6,000 people in to show their dogs. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Best of Show, but it's kind of like that,
I think. Yeah.
And then Bigfoot Festival at the end of July.
Yeah.
And then so we roll exciting. Right into Youth Rodeo first weekend in August, then into Fair. So we've got a busy summer ahead of us, and just encourage folks to support the events that we're bringing, because with that support, we're able to bring more.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Brian. Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then.
Wait, what?
And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This, Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This, Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.